If you live long enough and you start to have like Alzheimer's or dementia, if you're well practiced throughout your whole life, you'll still be grounded in something, right? You're not going to like, I don't know.
I see my memory is just not as sharp as it used to be, but I'm also aware of it. Also there's a fundamental quality, because often things, especially like, you know, as you get older, yeah, there's just a natural disinclination to trying to remember everything. There's too much to remember. You have to be selective, and you know, nature filters stuff out quite naturally. But also, even in terms of something more extreme, like Alzheimer's or you know, senile dementia, there's a fundamental quality of being that is not really there's a, like I remember one, of course, a great example is Ajahn Chah. I mean, he had, you know, all sorts of, you know, degenerative brain disease that really disabled him. I remember one time being at Spirit Rock, and a Cambodian monk who was the supreme patriarch of Cambodia, beautiful monk Mahakosananda, and we were at a meeting of kind of Buddhist leaders at Spirit Rock. His Holiness the Dalai Lama was there, and Mahakosananda Alzheimer's was really starting to kick in, and he had shown up, but it didn't have an attendant. So the contingent from Abayagiri, one, we noticed that, so we just really picked up the you know, attending to him, looking after him, which we would have done anyway. But then it became clear, okay, we really have to be clear on, you know, getting him there at certain times and getting doing things. But he was, despite all of that, there was no confusion there. I mean, he didn't exactly know when to be at different places and when was daytime, when was nighttime. Because he'd sometimes, you know, he'd wake up and, oh, I'm hungry. and it could, you know, it could be any time. But anyway, we looked at, but he was just a delight to be around, and he was incredibly bright. And then his interactions with His Holiness were really charming, and they were, you know, the both of these great beings just kind of beaming, because they'd known each other over many years, and so it was really, you know, quite touching to see. And I remember sort of saying to another monk, when I'm old and decrepit and sitting in my wheelchair drooling, I hope I'm like that.
Yeah, just, you know, in line with what Lung Pa was relating, kind of also to me it highlights the fact that there's two words, two different Pali words that are both translated into English as mind. So when you're talking about the word mind, and particularly like in something like Alzheimer's, where there's a deterioration of what we call mind, that's actually probably more related to the term manas, which is translated as mind, rather than the term citta, which is also translated as mind, but have two kind of distinct qualities, or two different qualities. And the manas is more, I think Ajahn Jeff translates it as intellect, and it refers to those kind of, you know, functional aspects, you know, like being able to think and process and make judgments and process information and store information and retrieve information and analyze and things like that, those cognitive abilities. And citta just is a broader, more receptive term with kind of the fundamental quality of awareness, you know, being at the base of this activity of citta. It's not really a thing. It's an you know, kind of a activity when it's in movement, and it's quiet and solid and reflective when it's still, citta. And from what I've heard in the descriptions of Ajahn Chah, yeah, maybe the intellect, the manas, was really deteriorating. His cognitive functions weren't, he wasn't processing and being able to communicate and, you know, have a strong intellect kind of a thing happening. But his citta, the heart-mind, was rock solid, stable, and unwavering from the descriptions. And I guess one of the monks who was able to kind of see.
Yeah, it was a close disciple of Ajahn Mun and Ajahn Sal. Actually, he was a primary disciple of Ajahn Sal. And then he was a disciple of Ajahn Mun as well. So, I got to know him over the years, and he came to stay at Wat Nanachar. It was the early days of Ajahn Chah being ill, and so he wanted to go over and visit Ajahn Chah and just sort of check Ajahn Chah out, how he could. And this monk was known for his psychic powers and his power of his meditation, and he anyway, he went over and visited Ajahn Chah, and then he himself went into meditation and checked out Ajahn Chah's mind and came back, and he said, you guys don't have to worry about Ajahn Chah. His mind is so bright and pure. You need to worry about yourselves more. But he said, but his mind likes to reflect on dependent origination. You should chant the dependent origination for him so that he can hear it. And so that was when I started. It was probably a year or so after Ajahn Chah was first bedridden. And then I started taking the Wat Nanachat community over to Wat Papong every week and chanting Purita's form, which is of course familiar, and there's different teachings and different blessing chants, and then chanting the Vipassana Bhumi, which is a chant that is the basis of insight, all the different bases of insight, and chant that for Ajahn Chah. We started doing that every week, go over and chant and then meditate, pay respects, and over time then people were coming from all over to join us. It's a lovely sort of thing to do.
Yeah, I like to think of it sometimes, because sometimes people get very wrapped up in thinking, oh, well, you know, I know my body's going to deteriorate and fall apart, but, you know, I don't want my mind to, you know, that's the one thing I worry about. I want to have all of my faculties, mental faculties. And it's, I think the more you can regard that aspect of mind, the intellect, it's just like another sense base. You know, it's just like your vision is probably going to go, hearing probably going to go. You know, well, you know, mind's another sense base, but that's not who you are.